In the third episode of Bauma Talk, we welcome Alex Woodrow, Managing Director at KGP Commercial Powertrain Intelligence. Together, we delve into the world of alternative drive concepts for construction machinery, and we discuss the opportunities, limitations, and infrastructure required to implement these technologies.
Bauma Talk. Insights into the construction machinery industry.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Bauma Talk. Great that you're joining us. This time we'll focus on moving forward in a very literal sense. We'll talk about alternative drive concepts for the construction machinery sector, a critical topic as construction machinery globally emits several hundred million tons of CO2 each year. Reducing this dramatic number presents a massive challenge for companies and your industry as a whole. This is precisely where alternative drive concepts come into play, serving as a key technology for achieving more sustainable operations and significantly lowering emissions. Joining me today is Alex Woodrow, Managing Director at KGP Commercial Powertrain Intelligence. Alex, welcome to Bauma Talk. It's great to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Alex. Looking forward to Bauma next year and having this chat with you today.
Yeah, me too. Alex, with 30 years of experience working alongside machine manufacturers, suppliers and other stakeholders, you bring a wealth of knowledge to the table. As a consultant, you have a broad overview of market trends and players. You can offer valuable insights from various automotive-related industries, including commercial vehicles and non-road mobile machinery, such as construction, agriculture and mining. So we are looking forward to your expertise today. And my idea for the start is to tackle the toughest question at first. Are you ready, Alex?
I'm ready, Alex, yes.
Perfect. Can a large excavator really run on vegetable oil?
It can, but there are challenges. So we have a lot of biofuels, which would be essentially vegetable oil. We have more advanced fuels, hydro-treated vegetable oil, and other biofuels, more advanced biofuels coming. So you can, but from a tailpipe emissions point of view, you're still getting carbon emissions from the tailpipe and noxious emissions. So we are going to see a lot of different alternatives, including zero-emission electric, potentially hydrogen, hybrid, as well as all those excavators that will still run for many years on some on fossil, but hopefully more and more low carbon or zero carbon alternatives.
Mm-hmm. So there are these alternatives, and that sounds promising. That's the first part and very important, especially since sustainable practices in the construction machinery sector are more essential than ever. We've heard the numbers. Alex, to set the stage, could you give us an overview of the most relevant alternative drive technologies?
I think at the Bauma show 3 years ago, all the OEMs were looking at a battery electric as a new technology to the industry. So we're going to see a lot of those machines, particularly in urban environments, but they are, at least in the short term, limited to smaller machines at one end and then very large machines at the other, where the job site or the mine might be lasting for 25, 30 years. So battery electric will be promising. We'll see quite a lot of those at this year's show. I'm looking forward to that. But then I think we're going to see alternatives such as hydrogen powered combustion engines, some hydrogen powered fuel cell machines, as well as more conventional engine driven machines running on these variants of vegetable oil, biodiesel, renewable diesel, or what we call HVO in Europe. So there'll be a mix of those, and hoping also to see introduction of some new hybrid machines, which will be conventional engines, but making the machine more efficient by blending or regenerating some of the lost work in the engine and from the hydraulics.
And having so many opportunities, there's always this one question in the center. Should companies commit to a specific drive technology or remain open to different technologies?
I think it's really dependent on the company. So if you look at the range of some of the manufacturers, if you're a compact machine manufacturer, then you might be able to consolidate into just battery electric. If you're a full range manufacturer producing from below 19 kilowatts all the way through over 560 kilowatt power bands, you're not going to be able to do that. So manufacturers have to be, to some extent, technology agnostic. They're going to look at solutions that best fit the machine type. And even then, within machine types and markets, you might need different solutions to fit where the job site or the customer's end requirement has different demands. So some applications might be have what we call very low load factors. So they're not doing really heavy digging. It's quite light digging or moving earth that's not heavy, particularly if the ground is dry or less compact. In harder applications where you've got, you might have very high load factors, and that relates to the energy throughput, you might need an engine driven or a fuel cell driven solution. So it's really machine type, but also end use and also job site specific. So a lot of different options are available. And that's why we see a need to be technology agnostic going forward in the legislation, but also stakeholders throughout the supply chain. So particularly rental companies and end users will have to be very aware of that. And I think we'll see this full spread of machines at Bauma next year, which is, again, very excited, looking forward to seeing what's going to be available.
Overall, those companies and players you were just mentioning work on alternative drive technologies, and they also, besides that, must deal with a range of other pressing issues, key drivers such as CO2 reduction targets, regulatory pressure, the need for energy efficient operations, and the list is even longer. So what role do these issues play, and what challenges are stakeholders facing as they navigate this complex landscape?
The legislation is getting more complex, and it's driving more at various levels, as you mentioned. So there is no global carbon or CO2 limits in the construction equipment industry, but all the stakeholders are having to meet the corporate social responsibility and the ESG, the environmental, social and governance regulations. So they're having to show that they are reducing their carbon footprint, both in manufacturing the machines and also in the in-use phase, what we call scope 3 emissions. So they've got that challenge. But also, if you're in urban areas where you've got, might have a low emission zone, or in the future, more zero emission zones, you've got to meet the challenge of that. And all at the same time, you've got to be producing machines that remain productive. So that is, they're able to do the same job, even if they're using a different drive line. They've got to be able to do the same job, and it's got to be cost effective. So the total cost of ownership, TCO, will also be relevant. And of course, you've got to get the energy or the fuel into the machine. So you've got these pressures. So we see, and we're going to again see this at Bauma next year, OEMs are looking at not just the drive line, but how they improve the process efficiency of a job site, how operational efficiency of the machine is improved, and the machine itself. So looking not just at the drive line, but improved hydraulics, improved controls, more autonomy, using digitalization to understand how the machine's being used and optimize that. So these four pillars that we see in the Committee for European Construction Equipment, the CC four pillars, we will see all of these pillars being improved and innovation in those at Bauma alongside the alternative drive lines. So the OEMs are having to keep all these different challenges in mind, as well as keeping their customers happy. And at the end of the day, machines are used to make profit or to do work. So they've got to be very conscious of both the societal low carbon and low emissions side, as well as the total cost of ownership.
So it's important to always consider the four pillars and to think the whole system. As we've learned in the introduction, you've worked on projects across multiple sectors. How do you see the construction industry's progress compared to industries like automotive or commercial vehicles?
I think the progress over the last 5 years in terms of machine development has been remarkable. So we're starting to see mid-range machines that everybody said couldn't be battery electric. You are having those coming into the market, and we will see those at Bauma. But the adoption of those is slower than people were expecting, because the economic conditions, interest rates, inflation rates are still high. We've got other geopolitical things. So it's slower than anticipated in terms of overall machine demand for these electric machines. But I think the technology steps, taking technologies, batteries, for example, from the commercial vehicle or the automotive segment has given them a real leap forward. So we see that positivity. The difference is that construction machines in particular are used for a very wide range of different applications. They're very heterogeneous in terms of their end use, whereas a truck is a lot more homogeneous. Different trucks are on the market, but they will be all used for taking goods from A to B, moving construction materials. It's a very, very similar duty cycle. Construction is a lot more varied than that. I think that's where the difference is. So this is why you're going to need a range of machines and a range of innovations to meet the market requirements going forward.
So the challenges are diverse, and it doesn't sound like an easy transformation we are talking about here. What should companies consider before making the switch to alternative drives? What's your recommendation?
I think the biggest question that they need to answer is, how is the job site going to evolve over time? Are you going from a site that's often unbroken, if it's a greenfield or even a brownfield site, to a finished building, and the machines change over time? So where are you going to get the most benefit and most decarbonisation? And you've got to remember that you won't necessarily have a grid connection straight away. So you need to think about what energy you got through the life of the job site. Look at putting a grid connection in is often, if you're going to use electric machine, is most important. And to get around that, you're going to need mobile charging or other infrastructure solutions. So I think thinking about the whole site, what is the energy demand of the whole site, is most critical. And you might put electric machines on site, but they're not able to charge them at the right time. So your productivity is going to go down, and you need to balance that out with a mix of solutions.
So I'd like to explore this crucial role of infrastructure with you and take a closer look at the current situation, as it is this foundation for success and at the same time a stress test for new systems. So what are the most pressing challenges that are limiting the implementation of alternative drives today? And what are the biggest chances in this context as well?
I think if we look at the two key roadmaps for decarbonisation, one will be the battery electric route. That's going to be really around the infrastructure of charging. One of the UK's largest rental companies estimated that only 2% of its job sites where it puts machines out on rent had got an electrical grid connection. So we need to be looking at that. So getting more grid connections onto site. And it's also the size of the grid connection. If you have 10 machines at 150 kilowatts, and that's 1.5 megawatt of total power you need to charge, which is going to be very difficult to do at a single point in time. So you have to stretch that charging over 24 hours, hence the need for a battery backup or a containerized solution to do that. But that all requires planning how you get the machines in the batteries. So we need to be thinking about the electricity demands of a site if we're going to go the electric route. I think the other one, the alternatives, is going to be hydrogen if we want zero emission tailpipe machines. And the amount of green hydrogen available at the moment is very limited. So we need to be scaling that. And obviously the European Union and all the individual countries like Germany, the UK, and so on are expanding the capacity, but it's going to be quite slow as that's ramped up and it's used in different industries that are probably even harder to decarbonize than construction. So we need to be having a roadmap for green hydrogen creation, so generating it probably mainly through electrolysis, but then also getting it to site. So you're going to need an infrastructure to either tank it, preferably, although that has capacity constraints, or pipe it to sites or close to sites where you can distribute it. And you're going to need a lot of vehicles, tankers to come in, or if you pipe it, it would be quite a large investment, so that's less likely. But you're going to need that infrastructure to do that. So we have two kind of infrastructures we've got to develop, is the electric infrastructure for certain sites and then a hydrogen economy for others. They're the real big challenges. And it's going to take not 5 years, it's going to be 10 years plus. So we have to ramp up the low carbon machine availability and sales in parallel with growth of that. And we see that in automotive as well. So car charging, and more relevant to me is the truck charging. We're ramping that up, and that is kind of one of the key barriers in certain markets. So we have to learn from those. And again, I think at Bauma next year, we're going to see innovators, not just in the machines, but also in the energy infrastructure, showing their new solutions at the show.
And we need more commitment from the governments and from the stakeholders. Is that right?
We do. I think it's a challenge at the moment. We see lots of uncertainty in government and budget issues across Europe. But we do need to put some of that money, at least to provide the foundation to build some of these projects. So looking at feasibility studies, starting to incentivize and seed the machines into the market. We need support. And it might not just be all financial support. It might be looking at new carbon taxes, where we see carbon taxes come along. So de-incentivizing fossil diesel to other alternatives, helping with tax breaks on new machines, because these machines and infrastructure is a lot more expensive than the conventional. So we need to incentivize that through taxation or other fiscal incentives. So a lot of different solutions, but government has to play a role in that. And if you look at infrastructure, and that's not infrastructure for charging, but infrastructure in countries, so whether it's new railways, roads, houses, a lot of those are driven by government or local government investment. And so as part of the process, when they're tendering for contracts, they need to be looking at how do they incentivize low carbon machines as part of that.
So when we talk about all that, about alternative drives, it often feels like the technology is still far from being ready, but that's not the case. You've just mentioned that they are already working successfully and there are great stories to tell. Can you share some examples of companies, projects from governments, for example, that have successfully implemented alternative drive concepts?
I think if you look at all the major OEMs in Europe, they all have interesting solutions in their product portfolio. So everybody really has got electric machines. So I don't want to pick out one particular manufacturer that might consider a leader, because they're all leading in specific niches. But I think if we look at projects that have been successful, particularly I think in, for example, in Norway, in Oslo, they have a zero emission program within one of the large construction projects. I think that's quite successful because it's been bringing machines, it's been putting the infrastructure in, it's been incentivizing them, it's been building the tendering around that. So I think that's quite successful in kind of one of these prototype projects. We see it in Sweden. One of the large OEMs has a quarry project where it looked at how you build that system. And a lot of those are going on. A lot of these projects around large infrastructure projects, they might be small to start with, but it's providing that learning. And I think there's a lot of those going on. So we need to learn from those. I think the broadest project or incentivized program that there is in the Netherlands, where the government is putting a lot of money into zero emission machines. But it's still driving that through local government programs. And I think it's those where they're collaborating across the project. So the contractor, the rental companies, or the people that are owning the machines or putting the machines in the market, local government, and then the regional government that is funding the project are all collaborating together. I think that's the best example. So it's not, as we were saying, it's about the system. So it's not one single machine. It's bringing the whole of the planning of the project, the delivery of the project, and getting the energy to market, which are the most successful so far, the good examples.
Alex, thanks for taking us to Norway and to the Netherlands. So looking once again at the automotive industry, how can advances, especially in battery technology, inspire innovation in construction equipment?
I think battery technology is still evolving. So the challenges of automotive and construction are slightly different. So automotive is very, very, very cost sensitive. It's also quite weight sensitive and also energy density sensitive, because you have to get the battery in the car. You've got to be able to recharge it quickly. But I think the learning on how you develop those batteries, how long they last, what is the durability, and how you get the cost down, all that is being learned, all that learning is transferring into construction machines. So construction machine, typically the batteries might be still 3 to 5 times the price of an automated one because of the low volumes, but you're getting all the learning. So how do you package the battery? How do you manage its life? What is the life expectancy? How durable is it? How do we charge it best? What kind of chargers might we use? Are all being learned from the automotive industry. So we've made a really massive step change in automotive, and that's transferred, I think, first to the truck commercial vehicle segment. So we're seeing electric trucks now range up to 600 or even in the future 1,000 kilometres from 200 to 300 kilometres just 3 years ago. And so we're going to see that transfer into machines where you can have a machine that might have done just 4 hours work on one charge. You're getting it to a full 8 hours. And I think that's where the innovation is being able to get that full day's work or at least one shift work out of machine and then charge it quickly at the end of the shift. So you might get it back up to 80% of charge within an hour to 90 minutes. We're getting that learning from automotive and commercial vehicle and bringing that over to the construction equipment industry so that you can make those machines more productive. So they're not just doing half a day work, they're actually doing 24 hours work, albeit with rest breaks or charging breaks in between.
So it's a big chance to learn from each other in the future as well. Finally, let's take a look at the upcoming trends. What do you see as the most exciting developments for alternative drives in the construction machinery sector?
I think getting electric into larger machines is interesting. I mentioned compact machines, so mini excavators, small wheel loaders. There's a lot of electric machines there, but I think it's exciting. We're excited to see it in mid-range and even the largest machines. So although we might not see them all at Bowmer, I hope we do. Some of the mining companies have got their big mining dump trucks of 100 tons plus weight moving to battery. And that's because on a closed site where you've got a long mine site life, you can look at the total cost of ownership over the life of it, but also getting fuel out there and fuel is the biggest, one of the biggest costs and also the biggest carbon emitter on a mine. You can make a business case, but where the exciting bits will be in the middle, on the truck side, they call it the messy middle, is where you're going to struggle more with past technology to electrify. So I'm going to see, I expect to see at Bowmer next year, a lot of those mid-sized machines electrifying. But I also think, and we're talking about maturity of products, I think battery machines are relatively mature now. There are some improvements, but I think on the hydrogen side, where people might have been looking at fuel cells 3 years ago as a solution, I think fuel cell is still attractive in some applications, but it might be less robust or less durable in certain ones where you've got particularly high gravity shocks, where you're digging or hammering. So I think the hydrogen combustion engine is going to be one of the stars of the show next year. I think we expect to see quite a few, at least engines, if not necessarily machines with engines in at the show. And I think a hydrogen combustion engine is very similar in overall output and efficiency to a fuel cell. So I think some of the step changes and improvement there and getting very close to maturity and coming to market with those hydrogen combustion engines, I think that will be, for me, is one of the most interesting things that will be at Bowmer next year.
So wide range will be in the spotlight in Munich in April. One practical tip in the end for companies looking to take their first steps toward alternative drives, Alex, what would you recommend as a starting point?
I think, as I said, you've got to really look at the job site. So don't be, you can't do everything at once. So get some machines in, test them, learn with them, build your internal practices around that know-how. If you go for every different solution at once, then it's more likely to lead to failure. You need to do learning. You need to electrify or move to hydrogen with your highest moving machines. They probably have got only medium load factors to start with and get that learning. Get the customer happy with it. And don't forget, in construction, the rental company is not really the end user. It's often different. So you need to get that learning internally within the OEMs and the rental companies and then their end customers. And I think that's that collaboration. That's a don't do everything. You can't do everything at once. So focus on some the low-hanging fruit, I think was a phrase used in the recent podcast. And I think we've got to do that. Is that learning process isn't going to be overnight. We've got to do small baby steps and so don't spread your resources too thinly.
So to end with a positive note, maybe in one sentence, why will all the efforts pay off in the end, despite all the mentioned points?
It's inevitable that we're going to have to decarbonize. And I think the industry's made massive steps. I think the amount of investment, and when you consider these OEMs have a lot smaller R&D budgets than in truck and in automotive, I think they've done remarkably well. I think we'll see the results of that collaboration at the show at Bowmer next year. And with using the four pillars that we discussed, machines are a lot more productive. They're a lot more efficient, and they are going to become low carbon within the next decade. So there's no doubt about in my mind that we need to do it and that we will do it. I think just the cautionary note is that you can't do everything at once and we will need different solutions. But I'm no doubt that we will see solutions, great solutions across all the applications at the show next year. So Bauma is where you bring all the stakeholders together to have that discussion. So not just the OEMs, but also their customers, their end customers. And I think I'm pretty sure there will be legislators and governments there. So bringing everybody together to really see the steps that have been made since the last show, which was still post-COVID. I think that's really going to be really optimistic. There'll be a lot of buzz around the machines. And so Bauma, I'm sure, will be the biggest Bauma yet.
That was a quite long sentence, but we take it as it is. Thank you so much. You'll be joining us in Munich as well, Alex. It was a pleasure to have you here at Bauma Talk and hearing your expert insights on the future of alternative drive concepts in construction machinery, which will definitely, as we said, in the spotlight at Bauma 25. So the next episode will dive into network construction, exploring how digital solutions and connectivity are transforming your industry. Don't miss that. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll join us again. Until then, take good care. Thanks, Alex, again.
A pleasure. Thanks, Alex.
Bauma Talk is presented to you by Messe München, powered by VDMA. Bauma is the world's leading fair for construction machinery, building material machines, mining machines, construction vehicles, and construction equipment. Bauma takes place every 3 years in Munich.